Christ is risen. For those of you who may not know, my name is Joe. My pronouns are he and him. Wherever you've come from, whatever gifts you bring with you today, I'm glad to share this Easter Sunday with you. And that goes to those of you joining us on the internet as well. I hope that you can find some flowers and some signs of new life wherever it is that you happen to be today. One of my favorite church services every year is the Good Friday Tenebrae service. This year on Good Friday, we chose to join a daytime service with Mount Royal and First Mennonite churches, and it was good to be part of a full church with them. Kudos to those of you who sang in the choir. That was certainly a highlight as well. But I confess that I did miss the dark and quiet circles of our traditional gathering on Friday night. Many of you have participated in this in years past. We sit in small circles around this room as we read through the gospel stories of Jesus' crucifixion and death. The lights are turned out. The room is lit with candles in each of our circles. As we follow the journey of the cross, for each station of the cross, we pass around various items that represent the deep emotional journey. And we hear the repeated refrain that this story of Jesus is also our story, that he invites us to join him there. And with each step closer to the cross, we blow out another candle as the night deepens and the crucifixion grows more and more certain. And when we finally arrive, as we all knew that we would, at the moment of Jesus' death, we blow out the final candle. And we sit for a while in darkness, in silence, feeling the weight of it all. There aren't any surprises in this service, especially now that we've done it together for almost a decade. We know that the Good Friday story ends in death and destruction, but we still sit in that tension. We feel the heartbreak of innocence lost, the weight of the final act, the inevitability of death, for this is our story. And then in the darkness, we hear these words. With this, the day ends. Like the disciples, we are scattered. We leave in shock, in fear, in silence, in darkness. But not without hope. For with the darkness comes the reminder that the Sabbath has begun. Once again, God's work is done. As Jesus said, it is finished. Once again, God rests. And with that comes the hope that once again, against all odds, God's work is good. What do you think? I know we name it Good Friday. There's a whole lot of tension in that title. How can a crucifixion be good? How can the death of the Messiah be good news? How can the story of the Son of God end in the darkness of the tomb? Y'all aren't new to Easter. I'm pretty sure you know how we resolve this tension. Good Friday isn't the end of anything. This is just the beginning. To borrow a phrase from Valerie Kaur, this is not the darkness of the tomb, but rather the darkness of the womb. And as that Good Friday prayer points out, even as Jesus cries out, "It is finished," the story has been dropping hints all along that he is not finished with anything just yet. It's certainly there in the symbolic timing, beginning with the holy day of Passover, pointing to the Exodus story, another story where death and destruction bring about deliverance. And then ending at the sunset, marking the beginning of the Sabbath, the day of rest, pointing way back to that creation story where God brings order out of disorder, form evolving out of chaos. In this story, the rescue is not separate from the tragedy. Creation is not separate from the deconstruction. The beginning is not separate from the end. And actually, this is not a Western story with a beginning, middle, and end that we're used to. This is also an Eastern story of repetition, of cycling through the same story from different angles. The repetition offers different perspectives on a unifying theme, each experience bringing a different angle of truth to light. Our songs and prayers and sermons often speak about Easter as a once and for all event, a cause and effect chain of events from the past. Because of Jesus' death and resurrection back then, death has been defeated. The chains of sin have been broken and the grave is empty. All of that is true, that timeline kind of thing, is true from one perspective. And from another perspective, even though this has happened, we still die. We still sin. And the graves are just as full as they've ever been. On my trip to Pennsylvania last month, I visited the graves of my grandparents. They're still there, even on Easter. They're gone from this world in a real and meaningful way. We sang already this morning that death has lost its sting, that death has been swallowed up in victory. Yes, but we still feel it. We still carry that weight. Our mortality remains. It's not to say that the resurrection of Easter didn't happen or that it didn't work. It's just to say that Easter is part of this whole story, the repeating story of order, disorder, and reorder, the revealing of the larger pattern that God has been working through from the very beginning. Richard Rohr said it this way: resurrection is incarnation taken to its logical conclusion. Resurrection is happening all the time, in millions of ways and in thousands of expressions, everywhere all the time. And it's the pushback of death that makes it hard to see, that it pushes forward, but then it's undone. It pushes forward, then it's undone. And that's why the cross had to be given as this dramatic symbol of even the best will be undone. I don't know why God created the universe that way. I really don't. That the undoing is part of the remaking. Maybe that's at the core of the biblical notion of faith. This all means something. This is still good. This is still going somewhere. And that is planted in us. What do you think? There's a lot planted into those words. But at the core, I think, as Richard says, it is simple and obvious if we've been paying attention to the biblical story. From the beginning, God has been telling us that this creation, this universe, is good. From the beginning, God has been inviting us to share in that goodness, to join in the creative process, to join in the making and unfolding of the cosmos of which we are a part. But we are limited creatures with a limited perspective. We see all the endings. We experience the struggle. We feel the pain. We fear the dying. How can the world be good when so much bad has happened, when so much bad continues to happen? How can the Friday be good when it's so full of undoing, even the undoing of the best, the Christ? But that's the good news of incarnation. God is with us, even in the undoing. God is here for all of it. Or more accurately, all the parts of this story are held together in the larger whole that is God, that is the Christ. That's a lot of philosophical mumbo-jumbo for a Sunday morning. This phrase that the undoing is part of the remaking has grabbed a hold of me, and it won't let go, even though I don't always have the words, the right metaphors to explain it. I'll try again. We've been talking throughout Lent about wholeness, about loving God with our whole selves, heart, soul, mind, and strength. We've been talking about how all parts of who we are, all the stuff of life, all of it has a place. All of it is sacred in its own way. It's all created by God. It's all from God. It's all part of this larger unity that we call faith. So it's all part of God's creation. It's all worth celebrating and exploring. Everything belongs. And Easter continues that. Easter confirms that wholeness. And Easter shows us just how far that goes. The thing about all these things that make us human, our bodies, our hearts, our minds, is that they are limited. They break down. They are deeply flawed. They are filled with endings and losses. As embodied beings, our wholeness includes the endings, the inevitability of death. The way most of our songs and prayers and worship services talk about Easter puts this new life of Easter over and against the pain and death of Good Friday. The resurrection gives us victory over the grave, we say. Jesus conquered death, as though the events of Easter morning reversed the events of Good Friday. As though Jesus was crucified and buried, but wait, he had this resurrection card up his sleeve, and he on the third day, boom, he played his Easter card, and death got canceled forever. Well, that's not wrong. That is a biblical perspective. Paul describes pretty much exactly that. Where is your victory, O grave? Death, where is your sting? Gotta love the sacred trash talk. Thanks be to God who gives us victory over the grave. This is true and biblical, but here's the thing. Paul is dead, as far as we know. If we're looking at the scoreboard, as far as we can tell, it's still resurrection 1, death 100 billion or so. When the biblical writers speak of death being canceled, they are pointing out there. They are pointing to a future hope where God's creation no longer requires the undoing of pain and death. We can believe in that, we can hope in that, we can trust in that. And in the meantime, death is still very much not canceled. Even what we call the salvation of God, the new life of Christ, does not spare us the reality of death in this life. Again, death has lost its sting, but come on, I've been to funerals with many of you. We feel that sting. We carry it with us. Many of us have been forever changed by it. The comfort of Good Friday is that we're not alone in our mortality. Our Creator knows our pain. Our God is with us in our pain. As Rohr says, the cross reminds us that even the best will be undone. And God's creation is still good. That's the first revealing of Easter. Not that death is canceled, but that the experience of death, what we experience and perceive as pain and destruction and evil, it is, and it is part of the goodness of the whole. If death is part of Jesus' story, if death belongs in the good news of the gospel, then its presence in our story is also good. Not like, yay, I'm so happy to face the reality of death, but more like, maybe, somehow, beyond this, in the end, death, ending, pain, all of it is more friend than enemy. That does sound like the way of Jesus, doesn't it? Winning the victory not by canceling the enemy, but by welcoming the enemy in, by making the enemy part of the family. Can we extend that even to the enemy of death? That's the second great revealing of Easter. Not only will the best of us be undone, but also the worst of us, our greatest vulnerabilities, our mortalities, our pain, our limitations, even the worst of us has a place in the remaking. Of course, Easter has always been about more than just our physical mortality and limitations. It's also about our hearts, minds, and souls, our spiritual condition, call it guilt and shame, call it brokenness, call it immorality, call it sin. As with death, we often talk about the gospel story taking away our sin, canceling it, wiping it out. And yes, again, that is biblical. That is a biblical perspective. But again, like with death, that kind of perfection and enlightenment, whatever you want to call it, that possibility of perfection is only for the future. And again, we live in the meantime, where our moral failures, our culpability and human suffering are far from canceled. And as with the reality of death, that doesn't feel so good. I would rather be perfect already, or at least good enough. I would like to feel as though I am forgiven all the time. But I'm not. I'm all too aware of my imperfections. I am filled with guilt and shame at times. And if Easter is meant to cancel my imperfections, well, this is my 43rd Easter. I have checked all the boxes of admitting and believing and confessing 1,000 times. And I'm still as I am, a deeply flawed human being. Believing, belonging, and behaving in the way of Jesus has not transformed me to a perfect state. But what if Easter is about, not about canceling, but about including and even embracing us in our imperfections? How many of you, just out of curiosity, how many of you have heard of this parable, The Rag Man, by Walter Wangerin? Some of you have heard it. It's a story from another era, perhaps, an allegory of the Easter story. And it's another metaphor that has stuck with me over the years, and so I would like to share this adaptation with you. This is adapted from the original short story by Walter Wangerin with some words from another adaptation by an internet figure called Scott. Once upon a time, I stumbled across a story most strange, most incredible, like nothing I had ever seen before. It left its mark on me, and if you listen now, I will tell it to you. Before dawn one morning, I noticed a young man, healthy and strong, walking the alleys of our city. He was pulling a cart filled with bits of cloth, bright and new. Were those blankets, clothes, bits of cloth waiting to be sewn? No, rags, he cried out, clear and sweet in the heavy air. Rags, new rags for old. I take your tired rags, rags. Now this is a wonder, I thought to myself. A rag man was a leftover from another era. A junk dealer, we might call them, a dumpster diver, someone who collects unwanted items and recycles them, sells them for whatever profit can be found. Not a lot of money in being a rag picker these days. This one looked well enough, able and strong, his eyes flashed intelligence. Could he find no better job than this? And what an unlikely strategy, new rags for old. That's a hard way to make a living. I followed him. My curiosity drove me, and I wasn't disappointed. Soon the ragman saw a woman sitting on her back porch. She was sobbing into a handkerchief, sighing and shedding 1,000 tears. Her knees and elbows made a sad X. Her shoulders shook. Her heart was breaking. The ragman stopped his cart. Quietly, he walked to the woman, stepping gently through the backyard of broken toys, empty boxes, discarded furniture. Give me your rag, he said gently, and I'll give you another. He slipped the handkerchief from her eyes. She looked up, and he laid across her palm a linen cloth so clean and new that it shone. She blinked down at the cloth and then up into the eyes of the one who gave it to her. He turned and walked back to his cart. And then the ragman did a strange thing. He put her stained handkerchief to his own face. And then he began to weep, to sob as harshly as she had done, his own shoulders shaking in grief. And when I looked back to the woman on her porch, she was left without a tear. This is a wonder, I breathed to myself. And I followed the sobbing ragman like a child who cannot turn away from mystery. Rags, rags, new rags for old, he called. In a little while, when the sky showed gray behind the rooftops, the ragman came upon a girl sitting on the curb of the street. Her head was down, her forehead wrapped in a bandage. Her eyes stared vacantly. There was blood on the bandage, soaking right through. A single line of blood ran down her cheek. The ragman paused next to this child, knelt beside her with care and compassion. I watched as he reached into his cart and drew out a soft yellow cap. Give me your rag, he said, extending the cap towards the girl, and I'll give you mine. The girl remained motionless while he loosened the bandage, removed it, and tied it to his own head. Then he gently placed the cap onto hers, and I gasped at what I saw, for with the bandage went the wound. Her skin was left smooth and whole, and now the blood ran against his brow, a darker, more substantial blood, his own. Stunned, the girl and I both watched as the ragman rose unsteadily to his feet and back to his cart. Still sobbing, now bleeding, rags, rags, I take old rags, he cried, leaning forward as he pulled his cart with renewed urgency. Soon he came upon a man huddled against a telephone pole. You look cold. The ragman said, "I have new rags for old." The other man pulled away from the pole, revealing the right sleeve of his jacket. Flat, the cuff stuffed into the pocket, he had no right arm. "It's okay," the ragman said. "I'll take your jacket. You can have mine." The man took off his jacket to trade, and when the ragman did likewise, I trembled at what I saw. For after the trade was made, the other man had two strong arms in his new coat, while the ragman was left with the empty sleeve. Again, the ragman pulled his cart through the neighborhood. Next, he found a person lying unconscious beside a bus stop beneath a ratty old blanket reeking of booze. Without a word, the ragman exchanged that blanket for a thick, new one. "New rags for old," I heard him whisper. And he took the old blanket and wrapped it around himself, now stumbling sloppily as he went. The day went on like that. The ragman's pace increasing after each encounter left him more burdened. He was weeping uncontrollably and bleeding freely at the forehead, pulling his cart with one arm, stumbling for drunkenness, falling again and again, exhausted, old, and sick. Yet he went on with terrible determination. By nightfall, I had to run to keep up. I myself wept to see the change in this man. I hurt to see his sorrow, and yet I needed to see where he was going, perhaps to discover what drove him so. On frail legs, he pushed through the alleys of the city until he came to its limits and rushed beyond. He came to a junkyard, to the garbage pits, and I wanted to help him, but I hung back, hiding. He climbed a hill, still pushing his cart. With tormented labor, he cleared a little space on the hill, and he sighed and lay down. He pillowed his head on a bloody handkerchief and a one-armed jacket. He covered his bones with that ratty old blanket. He closed his eyes and lay still. As I watched, he took a last drawn-out breath, and then he died. Oh, how I cried to witness that death. I slumped into the junk pile and wailed and mourned as one who has no hope, because I had come to love the ragman. His compassion was contagious. He had offered hope to the hopeless, even to curious bystanders, and now I cherished him. But still, he died. I sobbed myself to sleep. I promised you a story most strange, and it's not finished yet. Somehow I slept an unnaturally long sleep through Friday night and Saturday, and it's night too. But then on Sunday morning, I was awakened with a fright. Light, pure, hard, demanding light slammed against my face, and I blinked and I looked and I saw the greatest wonder of all. There was the ragman, folding his blanket most carefully, a scar on his forehead, but alive. And besides that, healthy, steady, strong. There was no sign of sorrow or age or addiction to him. His handkerchief was clean, his coat fresh and whole. All the rags that he had gathered shone fresh and new in his cart. What would you do in a moment like that? Climbing from my shelter, I moved toward the ragman, trembling from what I had seen and because what I knew I needed to do. I cautiously approached him, explained what I had seen, wondered out loud how any of this was possible. "Rags," he said, "new rags for old." "Mine too?" I asked. "Yours too." And he took my rags, all that I have, and gave me new ones, compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience. He clothed me, new rags for old. And I am a wonder beside him. The ragman, the ragman. My friends, I don't know where you've been, what you've seen, what has been done to you. I don't know what burdens you carry, what pain you're enduring, what grief you struggle through. I don't know your shame, your doubts, your fears. I have my own. I imagine we have much in common. What I do know is that wherever you are, whoever you are loved. You belong. Your life has meaning and purpose. All of it belongs. None of your scars and wounds disqualify you from God's embrace. None of your tears and fears are too much for God's family. None of your pain and addictions and sin and limitations, none of it diminishes your worth in the eyes of God. Alongside the saints of old, I'm convinced that nothing can separate us from God's love as shown by Jesus the Christ. Not life or death, not supernatural beings or earthly rulers, not the present or the future, not force or distance or paradox or anything else in all of creation. All of it belongs. All the parts of your story, our story, even the messy and disturbing parts, all parts belong to the greater whole of God's story. I can't promise that the ragman will take your pain and your death, your frailty. I can't promise that the ragman will take it away. Just that there is room for all of it. There is room for you as you are. All of it is being reformed, remade, renewed. This is the work of Christ in the cosmos. The destruction of Good Friday and the reconstruction of Easter Sunday. Everything belongs, everything held together, all things made new. This is what the ancients understood God to be doing from the very beginning. The Spirit of God in the creation story, before even day one, hovering over the chaos of the waters, not judging or punishing, but calling, singing, imagining, inviting forth new life. What will come out of these dark waters? What is being born amidst the chaos? That is who God is, in the beginning, in the Easter story, in the end, and now. God's world is not a straight line, but a circle, a cycle, maybe a spiral, a rhythm. The resting, the dying, the ending isn't the end of anything. It is the night before the day, the winter before the spring, the inhale before the exhale. Good Friday and Easter Sunday, death and resurrection held together. And we are part of that in our undoing and our remaking. To close, here are two parts to one prayer. On the left is the Good Friday prayer I read earlier, the closing lines from our traditional Good Friday Tenebrae service. And woven in with those on the right are some new words, an Easter prayer of hope and new life. I will read the white print, and you can join me in reading the yellow. With this, the day ends. Like the disciples, we are scattered. We leave in shock, in fear, in silence, in darkness. But not without hope.
And not without fear.
For with the darkness comes the reminder that the Sabbath has begun.
And with the light comes the reminder that there is
only
work to be done.
Once again, God's work is done.
And once again, God's vision is renewed.
As Jesus said, it is finished. Once again, God rests.
Once again, the Spirit awakens.
And with that comes the hope that once again, against all odds,
and with all expectations,
God's work is good.
God's work is great.
All of it. Hallelujah.